August 28th, 2015. You are looking live at Athens, Georgia. This is episode 524 of the Will Leach Experience podcast on Sports on Earth. I am the aforementioned Will Leach, and I thank you for spending part of your day with me. First off, I would like to thank everyone for dealing with our audio issues of late. We were trying to fix the levels on this podcast, and doing so, we went through the MLB Advanced Media Office. If you listen to other MLB.com podcasts right now, there's this buzz going on in the background. That is what you've been hearing on this one. They're having that trouble with all of them. So today, we're trying it sans buzz, and hopefully the levels will be closer. One of the things that they told me to do, and I think their quote was, "Will, stop being so excited," because apparently my voice gets a little high-pitched. Who knew? When I get excited about things, and it messes up the levels a little bit. So I'm going to try to stay on an even keel today, but I cannot guarantee anything, because eventually we're going to be talking about Tim Beckman, and I'm going to, you know, sometimes it gets me tweaked a little bit. I apologize for nothing. Anyway, so today's podcast is our big college football preview edition podcast with our own Matt Brown. He's a college football writer for Sports on Earth. You can follow him and should follow him all season at Matt Brown CFB. Matt, how's it going, Matt?
It is very good because we are finally, you know, less than a week away from kickoff. So
it's time, right?
This time last year, we were already kicking off. But there's a week, one fewer week in the season this year, so it's been a tough wait.
Yeah, it's like Labor Day being late kind of like messed up everything. So
yes.
So it's why the baseball season goes. It's why the World Series is going to be in November this year. It's just there's all sorts of weirdness, and it's definitely the worst of the but we're here. This is the worst part. It's actually over. It's starting. So. Here's what we're going to do. 10 minutes on each of the five major conferences. I have a little buzzer here that will inform me when we've reached our 10-minute round. And then we get 5 minutes on your Notre Dame, your Boise States, or so on. And at the end, Matt's going to give us his big playoff pick, if that's okay with Matt. Okay with you, Matt? I don't want to usurp yourself.
I think it's all right. Well, my conference picks will all be out there, so we'll get the playoff pick out there on this. That's good.
Okay, it'll be at the end. There will only be like two or three people listening by then, so so it won't usurp the whole thing. And if you're nervous about it, just tell them it's okay. I'm not going to bug you about it. Yeah, I could probably guess anyway, having read all your stuff. So all right, 10 minutes starting off right now. In fact, I'm actually going to give this one 9 minutes so we can save 11 for the SEC. Okay, we're starting 9 minutes with the ACC. Now, in your preview of the ACC, you mentioned this was most likely to be the conference that will be left out of the playoff. Is that because the conference is down as a whole, because there are no great teams at the top, or both?
Both. I think, you know, Clemson, Florida State, both have a chance to be really good, but I just think every top team in this conference has obvious holes that, you know, it's kind of a tough one to pick because it seems like there's 3, 4, maybe even 5 teams who have a legitimate shot, but nobody's like, I don't think anybody's a top 5 team. You know, Florida State's in the top 10 of the preseason polls. I called them overrated at number 10 in the AP poll. I think they're probably maybe about 15. So, you know, it's, you know, Clemson and Florida State are kind of building toward next year. Louisville might be in that situation too. So it just, Georgia Tech, who was really good at the end of last year, they have a really tough schedule. They got a tough draw by ACC standards. So there's nobody I really like to get to the playoff. And I think it could be a messy year where there's a few 10-2 teams vying for a playoff spot. But if that's the case, I think the ACC champion would probably be the most likely to be left out because the depth of the conference is not as good as anybody else.
But this isn't so much the conference like just being down or like having a over some sort of existential problem as much as maybe just a timing thing, like there's a couple teams that are maybe in between cycles.
Yes.
You think it's
more I think that's it, because you know, I think there could be as many as like 4 top 15 teams, so it could be a pretty good league. It's just that I don't, you know, it's not quite where the Pac-12 is, where teams could go 10-2 but everybody's good. But it's, you know, also not like it's going to be awful and nobody deserves to, you know, be in a major bowl. I think it'll just be a solid season with top 15 type teams, and that's probably not going to be good enough to get into the top 4.
If you look at last year, I mean, all told, everybody kind of knew that Florida State, even though they were undefeated, you know, there were problems. And they sort of lucked out and won a lot of won some games that they certainly should have, or at least, but certainly were not dominant in the way that people thought. Theoretically, let's say that one of those games, the North Carolina State game, goes wrong on him, or the Georgia Tech game's wrong on him, or heaven forbid, the Florida game goes wrong on him. That would put this team, obviously that would have left them out of the playoff last year. That would put the league in a situation where, frankly, it would have been Florida State as a one or two loss team, and then everybody else just kind of floating around. Is that incarnation of the conference, if Florida State loses one or two games last year, better or worse than this year's?
I think it was probably a little bit better. I think Georgia Tech was better last year than it will be this year. Okay. Clemson, I like Clemson. I think, you know, they could surprise some people, but their defense last year might have been the best in the country. It's not going to be this year. You know, they lose their entire front seven basically on defense, which was a really, really good unit. Florida State, I just, you know, they showed cracks last year. Now they only bring back 11 starters. You know, they lose a Heisman winning quarterback in Jameis Winston. I just think everybody at the top except for Virginia Tech is going to take a step back. You know, I think Virginia Tech's going to be better. I think they could win the conference even. But, you know, it's just, you know, I liked Clemson for a lot of last year, and I think they take a step back. I think Florida State's just, you know, they're probably down, you know, as many as 10 spots in the poll. So, you know, I don't think it's any kind of a crisis. But if the ACC misses the playoff, then everybody will act like it's a crisis, because that's going to happen every year with whichever conference misses it, like the Big 12 last year.
Yeah, and then we'll get into this later, but I always like, if Notre Dame ever crashes it, then there's going to be two yes. conferences that are out. Then
the ACC will try to claim Notre Dame probably because it has the it's a half member and they play six ACC games this year. But yeah, that'll ruin everything, because, you know, especially the committee members putting such an emphasis on conference championships in their criteria, and then you get Notre Dame in the mix, and you get this offseason when all the coaches have been complaining about Notre Dame not being in a conference, that will undoubtedly create a mess, and it might happen this year. I think it will happen this year.
When you look at, like, let's look at Virginia Tech, because you're up on them a little bit. Obviously, Beamer has been under a considerable bit of pressure for the last few years. Will this ease it? Is this his... not to go from your experience, but like, is this his Paterno has an up year, so everybody leaves him alone?
I think it could be. You know, they were one of the most consistent teams in the country for so long, which is really remarkable. I mean, they still haven't missed a bowl in 20 years or something like that. And this was a program that was nothing until Beamer took over. So he's the type of guy who's, you know, he's tough to force out. You're not going to like outright fire him, but you could see a Mac Brown, Bobby Bowden situation happen for sure. You know, their offense has just totally lost the plot the last few years. It's just, you know, they've gone 7-6, 8-5, 7-6. Their offensive line has been a mess. Their running game has been a mess. They've had a lot of injuries. Last year, their top three receivers were all freshmen. So I think there's signs where they could be better this year. Their running game has to be healthier. Their offensive line has to be better. You know, they have some rising potential at receiver. I think Michael Brewer, the quarterback, is not, you know, particularly great, but he's a guy you can win with if you have a supporting cast. So I don't know if those problems are going to be fixed. You know, when you go back and watch them score 0 points against Wake Forest in regulation, you have your doubts about whether they can fix it.
As one would, yes.
But I think they have enough. Their schedule is easy enough. They don't play Florida State or Clemson from the Atlantic. You know, after they play Ohio State, it's like every game looks winnable. And even Ohio State's winnable. I mean, they won that game last year. Right. It's at home. Ohio State has some key suspensions, so I don't think they're going to win that game. But, you know, it's not out of the question. So I think Virginia Tech takes a step back in the other direction, although I'm having my doubts as I look on Twitter right now. And, you know, Bud Foster made dumb comments last night about finding players out of their cost of attendance money. And the Richmond paper just reported something about how they've been finding players anyway before, which is all really terrible and stupid. And what are they thinking? And I have my doubts about this coaching staff now.
Yeah, that is one of the craziest. With everything going on around college football right now, the idea that they landed on that is pretty wild, I have to say. Like,
where are the lawyers? You'd think the lawyers would be all over this type of thing, but I guess not.
It's unreal. Like, let's find... Okay, let's go the opposite direction of paying them. Let's actually find them for money that they don't have. That's good. That makes sense. Is there a team, and you know, we'll get to your prediction, but you know, in a lot of ways, it doesn't really matter who wins. Conference championship games are interesting because they really only matter in the context of the college football playoff anymore, which is kind of an interesting aspect. Is there a team, maybe not necessarily the best team, or maybe it is the best team, who's the most likely one where maybe the schedule falls out or their upside is so high? If there is one team that you had, you don't think one of them is going to make playoffs, but if there are one team that you think has the ceiling, the best ceiling to be able to do it, which one would you think it is?
I'll go with Clemson. I picked them to win the conference. I I have my doubts. They've had a bad offseason in terms of injuries and departures. They lost their starting left tackle. Isaiah Battle left for the supplemental draft. DJ Reader, one of their starting defensive tackles, just left the team indefinitely the other day. They lost their starting nickelback for the season. So they've had a bad offseason of injuries. When you combine that with Chad Morris, the offensive coordinator, left for the SMU job, they lose their front seven. And now I'm making a pretty bad case for Clemson as having that upside, I realize. But Deshaun Watson, I'm on the record as saying, is the most talented quarterback in the country. He didn't stay healthy last year, so that's another question. He's coming off a torn ACL, but he is a really, really good quarterback. And, you know, he didn't have a full sample size of a full season last year, but he had a better passer rating and an average more yards per attempt than Marcus Mariota in the time that he did play. So he's really, really good, kind of mature beyond his years as a quarterback. He did not look like a freshman last year. Their skill positions are very, very stacked. I love the receiving core, Mike Williams or Tavis Scott. I think their secondary is going to be great. I think their defensive front can still be better than people think. So when you have Watson at the center and Watson could end up being a Heisman candidate, I think their upside is higher than anybody else's in the conference. I don't think they're going to get to the playoff, but I think they have the best shot, especially because Georgia Tech, you know, draws a bad schedule in which it has to play Florida State, Virginia, or it has to play Florida State and Clemson from the Atlantic, and it has to play Georgia and Notre Dame, which is going to be a tough road for that team.
All right, so let's hear your last prediction and your actual prediction of the college football of the ACC championship game.
I have Clemson at 10-2 coming out of the Atlantic, and Virginia Tech at 9-3 coming out of the Coastal. And Deshaun Watson leads Clemson to the ACC title pretty easily in the championship game. I think Clemson is a team that's, you know, if it gets better injury luck after the offseason, is a team that's going to get better and better over the course of the season. And Deshaun Watson's going to have a ton of hype going into 2016.
All right, good. We made that in 9 minutes flat. Well done. All right, we're going to fly blind. This is the one, 10 minutes on the clock. This is the one conference that you have not actually published a preview for yet, though. Is that going up Friday? Is that going up today? Your Big 12.
It should be up Friday.
Okay, well, then everyone listening.
Barring any Baylor bombshells, it'll be up.
Right, all right. So then I don't know what you're talking about. But theoretically speaking, Big 12, everyone listening, go run and read Matt's preview of the Big 12. I feel like, did they have a team in the playoff last year? I don't remember. Who can remember? Certainly. I've heard a lot of theories. Putting aside TCU and Baylor for a moment, I've heard a lot. What do you think of Oklahoma? What do you think of obviously they're changing the offense a little bit. They're bringing in they've got their former freshman Texas Tech walk on coming over for the guy that everyone thought was a sleeper Heisman guy last year to win that spot. Are they in chaos? Or not chaos, but are they having too much transition right now? Or are they actually moving in the right direction they probably should have been?
I think this could be a three-team race for the Big 12 title. I think Oklahoma has a good shot to get in that mix. I'll probably have them in the top. You know, my preseason rankings from 1 to 128 will come out Monday, and I'll probably have Oklahoma in the top 15. I think, you know, Lincoln Riley, the guy they hired as the offensive coordinator from East Carolina, is a very, very bright, young coaching mind who's going to be a head coach probably in a few years. And, you know, that's a team that I think the problems kind of get exaggerated a little bit. I mean, because of what happened in the bowl game, especially. I mean, they lost 40-6 to Clemson. It was awful. But whereas a year ago, everybody kind of overrated Oklahoma based on the bowl game, I think they might be underrated based on the bowl game this time. You know, you can't put everything on the bowl game. And, you know, they had some injuries last year, and it's just they were identityless on offense. Their defense underperformed. So there's questions for sure this year. But I really like their skill positions. They're loaded at running back. Samaje Perine, you know, broke the single-game FBS rushing record against Kansas last year as a freshman. They have other running backs in the mix. The receivers are probably going to be really good. Sterling Shepard, who's an underrated player at wide receiver, missed or was injured like the whole second half of last year. So they didn't really have him. And, you know, Mayfield is going to be a fit at quarterback for this offense. He played it in high school. Played in a similar offense at Texas Tech under Cliff Kingsbury with an air raid style offense. So there's a lot of pieces here. And it's not like Oklahoma is that far removed from success. I mean, we talked about Virginia Tech and its consistent success. Oklahoma is a team that won 10, 11 games almost every year for, you know, like 12 years. So I think they faced an identity crisis. They've had so many offensive coordinators in the last 15 years, which happens when you're good and you lose guys head coaching jobs. That, you know, I think there's some instability, but I have confidence in the talent they have that they can play a role in the race. I don't think they're going to win it, but I think they have a shot.
You see some people putting – it feels like in a lot of ways Baylor TCU, people are, I feel like more people pick TCU just because they're at home in that game.
Yes.
It, but which one do you think is actually better?
I think people pick TCU because, number one, they're at home. And number two, they blew out an SEC opponent in a bowl game, which, again, gets inflated a little bit because people put too much emphasis on the bowl game performances for the next year. Three, they have a returning Heisman candidate at quarterback. And those are three reasons you look at and say, well, TCU should be the obvious favorite. I like Baylor's roster a little bit better. I'm not so concerned about losing the quarterback. You know, Bryce Petty was a very good quarterback, but, you know, Nick Florence a couple years ago threw for 4,000 yards, and most people probably wouldn't remember that name. Seth Russell steps in as a junior. I think he's going to have a big year. He's athletic. He can run a little bit. Baylor is the best receiving core in the country. They have all five starters back on their offensive line, a line that was pretty good. They have, you know, like the top three running backs back. It's just, it's a loaded team, and they have more, it feels weird to say, but they have fewer questions on defense than TCU. I mean, I expect TCU's defense to be fine. Gary Patterson's an excellent coach, an excellent defensive coach. You know, they have talent on their defensive line. I think their secondary will have enough pieces to be fine, but Baylor's made strides on that side of the ball the last few years, and that's kind of allowed them to go from fun team that goes 9-3 or whatever to legitimate championship contenders, that they're good enough to get stops on defense now. It's a really good line. Their secondary's gotten better. Taylor Young at linebacker's rising star. So I think Baylor has fewer questions than TCU on the field right now, and, you know, I could see it going either way. And both play a backloaded schedule that, you know, Baylor in the last month has to go at Kansas State, Oklahoma, at Oklahoma State, who ruined their season 2 years ago, at TCU and Texas. I mean, that is a brutal stretch after they play almost nobody the first half of the year. So, you know, there's that question whether these teams are going to kind of get beat up a little bit late in the year. But I think Baylor just right now has fewer holes and is well positioned on the field to score a lot of points and probably get more stops than TCU.
Yeah, I feel like if Baylor were at home to TCU this year, no one would be picking TCU.
I think that's definitely part of it, and I think people look at Trevon Boykin coming back at TCU.
Yeah.
You have a guy who finished in the top five for the Heisman, and you have 10 starters back on that offense that kind of just, you know, went nuts last year. And the last we saw them, they beat Ole Miss 42-3. That, you know, that's why their momentum's there. It's not like I'm down on TCU. I'm going to have them in the top six, top seven. But I think Baylor, if you look beyond the quarterback and Baylor's quarterback situation, is most likely going to be just fine, then I like Baylor a little bit better.
Where is Texas in its cycle of getting back relevant? And are they on his case yet or not?
I think Charlie Strong will have a long enough leash. I think more people are mad with the athletic director, Steve Patterson, right now, where it's like he's kind of taking a little bit of the heat off of the football success. You know, Texas, it's just, there's been some positive vibes coming out of fall camp, but I do not have confidence in that offense right now. I mean, like, Charlie Strong, I mean, this is a minor thing, but even in the offseason, he couldn't remember his quarterback's name in a lawsuit over which offensive coordinator is calling the plays, and it's like, they're just such a mess on offense that they have, like, literally, there's a lawsuit with Oklahoma State over whether or not the offensive line coach is calling the plays because, you know, he came over from Oklahoma State and made a lateral move. Texas claims it wasn't a lateral move, and it's just this whole big mess. In a deposition, Charlie Strong couldn't remember Tyrone Swoops' name, who was a starting quarterback last year.
Seems bad.
It was a bad offense that had no offensive line. Swoops was thrown into the fire before he was ready because David Ash stepped away from football for health reasons midseason last year. So, you know, I think their defense will be fine. Charlie Strong is a great defensive coach, but they, you know, they lose most of their key players. They bring back like one of their top seven tacklers. So and the other thing with Texas is I think their offense will be better, but at Notre Dame, Cal, Oklahoma State, at TCU and Oklahoma, that's five of their first six games. When you have no idea what you're doing on offense yet, that is not a good way to start the season. And it could, you know, that could be as bad as 1-5. I have them starting 2-4, and I think they can turn it around and get to a bowl game, but it's not a good start to the season.
That'll be pretty loud.
I talked about Baylor and TCU being backloaded schedules. Texas is the opposite, except it also plays at Baylor in the final game of the year.
Right. Yeah, that seems worrisome. Is there anyone outside of those top three that you're excited about, or because this seems to be a also like even the top four, or depending on where you have Texas or Oklahoma State, it feels like, and maybe Texas Tech, this seems like a down year for Kansas State, and some of the other teams are down the line. Is there anyone that you're interested in? You think could maybe make a little run up from the other otherwise?
I like this conference this year. I think Kansas State, yeah, will be down, but you never know. Bill Snyder usually pulls off a miracle, and they'll probably ruin somebody's season. West Virginia and Texas Tech, I think, can both be pretty good. West Virginia's defense is much better than you expect a Dana Holgorsen defense to be. Their secondary is really, really good. You know, their offense, they lose some weapons. They lose Kevin White. Skylar Howard, though, I like his potential quarterback. So I think West Virginia could end up, you know, winning as many as 8 games and being a factor. Texas Tech, they made a good hire on defense with David Gibbs from Houston, who's a guy whose basic whole philosophy on defense is force a lot of turnovers. And Texas Tech can't tackle anybody, so going for the ball and trying to force turnovers is a good idea. They're going to score a lot of points. I think 4-8 was a real disappointment last year. I think they can get up to 7, maybe even 8, and beat somebody. But the team I like to maybe even, you know, get into the race is Oklahoma State. They had issues at quarterback last year. Their whole defense was replaced last year. But the last 3 games, they were kind of a different team with Mason Rudolph at quarterback. They burned his red shirt because they had 2 guys get hurt. And Rudolph was kind of the guy who was looked at as the future of the program. And he played really, really well. And the offense looked much, much better in the Oklahoma game, in the Washington game, in the bowl game. Their defense should be a lot better and more experienced than last year. So, you know, that's the type of team that they get TCU, Baylor, and Oklahoma all at home in the last month of the season. They're going to beat one of those teams, maybe even 2. So I think they have a shot to make some noise and, you know, at least play a role. They'll be a factor in the race, even if they don't, you know, they're not a top 10 team.
All right, well, imagine if they had kept Wes Lund. Just imagine where they'd be, Matt.
Of course, they'd be a playoff contender for sure.
Obviously. Okay, last question real quick on this one. Is there any way after last year that this team does not get a team in the playoffs?
It's possible. You never say never. I mean, you know, if that happened, I mean, the amount of panic and you know, teams like BYU and Cincinnati are going to be really excited because you can see the conference expanding and really panicking if that happens again. I don't think it happens. I think there's going to be more kind of chaos elsewhere, whereas it's much easier to see a 1-loss team from the Big 12 making it this year because I think there's going to be a lot of 2-loss teams otherwise. But you never know, and I just, you know, I talked up Oklahoma State, I talked up Oklahoma. You know, there could end up being a situation where you get 3 10-2 teams or something, and then you get a mess, and none of these teams play a 13th game with a conference championship game, and that kind of hurt them last year. So it's not impossible. I don't think it's going to happen, but it's not impossible.
All right, now we go 10 minutes to your home conference and my home conference, the Big Ten. I wonder if this was a year where Ohio State didn't feel so stacked and had not just come off a championship, if we would be more excited about it. And Michigan State, we're maybe playing them at home. Michigan State, it feels like it's like they like this is the year they've actually kind of been building up to. Narduzzi leaving aside, it feels like a year they might have been building up to a little bit that people would be more excited about. But because Ohio State is so dominant this year, and it feels so dominant. It feels like maybe Michigan State's not given a straight phrase, but you're actually down a little bit. You have Michigan State losing 3 games this year, so you're not quite on that page.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have them as a top 5.
They're top 5. They're 5 in AP, yeah.
You know, they've finished the top 5 the last 2 years, which is a remarkable accomplishment by Mark D'Antonio. I mean, he's done such a great job. He probably deserves the benefit of the doubt. And I think Michigan State could be a top 10 team, but I'm a little bit more skeptical. I think what you have going for you there at Michigan State is that Connor Cook is back, and anytime you have a good, proven senior quarterback, you know, that's obviously going to help your team. They have one of the best defensive lines and one of the best offensive lines in the country. So right there, you have the foundation for a really, really good football team. Great line play and a proven senior quarterback. So, you know, not like I think Michigan State's going to be bad. I think they're probably going to end up in the Rose Bowl if Ohio State goes to the playoff. But I don't think they're going to be a top 5 type team. I worry more than I have in a while about their back 7 on defense. You know, they lose Narduzzi. Ed Davis, the talented linebacker, just got knocked out for the year. Their secondary took a step back last year, and it's probably going to take another step back this year. They lose most of their top skill position players. So, you know, I worry about all those positions. Jeremy Langford at running back, Tony Lippett at receiver were really good players last year, and it's tough to lose. And, you know, I think this is going to be a good team, but they play Oregon. They play at Ohio State. They play at Nebraska. We don't really know how good Michigan is going to be, but they play at Michigan. So there's losses that are possible. You know, if Michigan State being a top 15 team that goes 9-3 makes the Rose Bowl, you know, it's a testament to where Mark D'Antonio has taken that program that kind of sounds like a disappointment.
Right, right.
But, you know, that could be a really nice year and just not quite, you know, I don't quite buy them as a top five team, though.
Well, if you don't have Michigan State as a top five team, I can't see any way you think Ohio State even has a chance to lose this year.
Yeah, it's – here's my – if you look at their schedule, I don't think there's a chance.
Okay.
But you could easily see this being a Florida State type of situation last year or Miami in 2001 or 2002 where here's the undefeated – or they weren't undefeated last year, but the defending national champion – coming back, they look like a guarantee to win it, and then they blow it in the championship game or the playoff or whatever. And that could happen because somebody's going to get better over the course of the year and probably be at Ohio State's level by the playoff, like Ohio State did last year. Ohio State was not a playoff team in September. They were not a playoff team in October last year. They were, you know, clicking on all cylinders by December. And we've already seen it. I mean, it's really, really tough to repeat. And it's tough to get the same luck that you did the year before. Now, it's hard to say Ohio State got good luck last year when they were on their third quarterback in the playoff. But they stayed healthy otherwise. And just like Florida State did when they won the title in 2013. And last year, Florida State had more injury problems, their offensive line underperformance. Just things did not go quite right. And that can happen. And we already saw it. Joey Bosa is suspended for the Virginia Tech game, as is Jalen Marshall, as is Dontre Wilson, as is Corey Smith. A breakout candidate, Noah Brown, the receiver, was knocked out for the season by an unfortunate injury on Wednesday night. So that's another injury. So it's just injuries tend to happen and bad luck tends to happen and your star player gets suspended and you never know. But, you know, maybe they could lose at Virginia Tech, but, you know, they play Michigan State at home. They play Penn State at home, who they almost lost to on the road last year. I don't think they're going to almost lose to at home this year. They go at Michigan, and hey, maybe that would be funny. Jim Harbaugh ruins Ohio State season. You know, that would be madness. But you just don't see it. And I you know, not to spoil everything, but I think Ohio State's probably going to win the national championship. But I could see them plausibly losing in the playoff. I do not see them losing during the regular season.
I feel bad because I'm going to talk about two more East teams. But two traditional powerhouses kind of on their way back now. Penn State's a year ahead of them. They have probably more to come back from than Michigan has, but certainly they're a year ahead of them. Which team's going to be better, and what's it going to take to see, okay, these guys are back clearly on the right track, we're comfortable with where they are?
Yeah, I think both are definitely on the right track. I mean, Penn State is recruiting like an elite team now, and that's what you get when you hire James Franklin and his coaching staff. And you know, Michigan's going to do the same, and we know Harbaugh has a deserved reputation for quick fixes, and I believe he will. I think this year Penn State's probably a little bit better position, one, because their schedule's easier. I mean, Michigan plays at Utah the first game. They play BYU at home. They play Oregon State, who's going to be down. But, you know, when you have those games, it's, you know, whereas Penn State plays Temple, Buffalo, Rutgers, and Army, and San Diego, or sorry, Temple, Buffalo, San Diego State, and Army in a non-conference play. They don't leave the state of Pennsylvania until October 17th, and their cross-division games are Northwestern and Illinois. So, you know, there's a lot of wins on the table for Penn State. I think their defense was really, really good last year, and it's going to be really good again. Their skill positions are going to be a lot better. They were young last year, and there's kind of a lot of talent that they have that's rising. And, you know, if their offensive line stabilizes, I don't think it's going to be good because it was just a train wreck last year, but you know, they're going to be a little bit deeper. They have more options. The scholarship restrictions hurt them so much that they're going to have more options this year. You know, most of the guys are back, that Christian Hackenberg should be in better positions to look like the NFL prospect everybody expects him to be. So I have Penn State at 9-3. They're the type of team that still has a thinner margin for error because they're still recovering from the scholarship restrictions. They still have the offensive line issue. If they have injuries, you know, they could go south in a hurry. But I think, you know, 9-3 is optimistic, but I think they can get there. They might be favored in 10 games based on the schedule. So I think they're in better shape than Michigan right away. Although Michigan's a wild card. You just don't really know what to expect from Harbaugh in year one. But you look at that team and you look at the roster and it's like their best player might be a guy who's a redshirt freshman, which it's like, who are their all Big Ten players right now? I don't know. Jabril Peppers, who was a top recruit last year, is going to be a great safety. But other than that, it's a lot of unproven guys. I think the running game is going to be solid. But, I mean, you're relying on a quarterback probably from Iowa who, you know, kind of got booted from Iowa because he kind of, you know, they kind of fell out of favor as a starting quarterback. And that's who your guy is this year in Jake Rudock. It's just, I think Harbaugh will get the most out of him and they'll be fine. But I think they're probably looking at anywhere from 6 to 9 wins. I have him at 7. I think, you know, maybe next year they'll be a lot better.
All right, and so we probably touch on the other division at some point. Who's the most likely team to have the right to get crushed by Ohio State in the Big Ten championship game?
I was leaning toward Nebraska for a while, but I guess, I don't know. Wisconsin just seems like the safest bet. Their offensive line's taken has more questions than it has in a while, but I think their defense is going to be really solid. New coach Paul Chryst kept Dave Aranda, their defensive coordinator, around, which was a big coaching move to be able to retain him when Gary Anderson left. And Corey Clement, the running back, you know, he ran for 949 yards and averaged 6.5 yards per carry, which is good for a lot of starters. He did that last year when Melvin Gordon ran for 2,500 yards. So that's really impressive, and he's going to have a big year despite the fact that I'm a little bit worried about their offensive line. So I think Wisconsin they're probably in the best position. They get to play Rutgers and Maryland from the East. So, you know, after Alabama in the opener, it's like every game is winnable. So I think I give Wisconsin the edge over Nebraska, and I think Minnesota's schedule is a little bit too tough. I think they have a limited upside.
All right, give me the percentage odds that Tim Beckman is the coach of Illinois in September of 2016.
Oh, gosh.
I feel like there's two separate things. One are the stuff going on with Simon, whatever his name is, and all the other kind of abuse stuff that's a parallel track. I think a lot of people are like combining those two tracks. Because they're just saying this is a guy that's in trouble and so on. But like if that ends up being as bad as those allegations say, he's gone if he wins 9 games this year. But if he so let's go into the assumption that that gets settled in a way that doesn't kill him. Does 6 wins keep him, or does he need 7? Or if, because I feel like if they don't make a bowl game, he's gone no matter what. But if he gets 6 or 7 wins, and remember, this is a team that has improved every year since he got there. If they win 7 games, I don't see any way he doesn't keep his job, as long as that other stuff doesn't get in the way.
I think you're right about 7. I think 7 is a number. You show another step of improvement, and yeah, assuming, you know, everything else doesn't blow up, which it very well might, because, you know, the AD, the whole athletic department's kind of under fire right now, and yeah. You don't really know what's going to happen there, and, you know, if there's leadership changes and all that. So if they get to 7, which I don't think is impossible. Nothing's impossible in that division. It's not right. Like Illinois doesn't have any talent. I mean, they lost Mike Dudek at receiver. We don't know when he's going to be back, but it's, you know, they're not hopeless. Beat Minnesota last year. They beat Penn State. I think they can win. They'll be in some toss-up games, but I think the more likely scenario is that this implodes.
That seems to be the general consensus.
I mean, it's a weird thing because you're right. They have improved every year. They've gone from 2-10 to 4-8 to 6-7. But it feels like in that time, correct me if I'm wrong as the Illinois fan, but in that time, it doesn't feel like fan support for Beckman has increased at all.
Oh, no, not to any stretch of the imagination. But for what it's worth, you know, I mean, I have to say myself personally, I mean, our expectations are so low. they made a bowl game last year. Like, to me, that was enough. Just get me in a bowl game every year. We'll build a statue of you. We'll Zex these Heart of Dallas bowls.
I would not recommend building the statue.
But. No, that would be a bad idea. all right, so now we're going to go to the Pac-10. You argue, kind of argued in your piece, what's interesting about, and we'll get to your projected standings, but, you know, when you look at this conference, it is stacked, and particularly stacked in coaching talent. This is an absolute built conference coaching-wise. It's funny, when you kind of look at some of the projected standings, it's possible that every team in this league, as I think you have it, could lose 2 conference games.
Yes. And now I feel bad, though, because you're absolutely right when you say the conference is stacked and stacked with coaches. And here I am picking Steve Sarkisian to win the conference, which kind of is at odds with each other. It's like, well, he's not the best coach in the conference, and there are a lot of good coaches. So I do not have confidence in – I might be even less confident picking the Pac-12 than the ACC. I think the Pac-12 is going to get in the playoff because it's deeper, and whoever's going to win is going to have a better resume. But, yeah, this is going to be a fun race. I mean, the Pac-12 South has gotten so much better. You know, poor Colorado, who is getting a little bit better, just is kind of hopeless because everybody else is getting better, so they're trying to catch up, but it's, like, impossible right now. I mean, both Arizona teams are really good right now and are really, really well coached. Todd Graham, people like to make fun of him for – and criticize him for job hopping, but he's a really good coach, and I think he's assuming he stays at Arizona State, that program can sustain success like it hasn't in a long time. And same with Arizona. I mean, it's like a good fit for Rich Rod. It's like a West Virginia type program. It's a little bit under the radar, and you can consistently compete. You're not going to consistently go to the playoff, but you can compete. And so you that depth, and you know, the North isn't quite as deep, but Oregon and Stanford are still good. Cal is going to be dangerous because it's going to score 60 points a game and give up 50. So, you know, last year, staying up late and watching those, you know, 1 a.m. Pac-12 games is a lot of fun. It's going to be the same way this year. It's a fun conference.
Does it hurt this conference to have all their big games be lasting so late at night and then to have their network not have the prominence of the SEC network or even the Big Ten network in a lot of ways? Does it hurt them? Because, I mean, if you like, when you take a look at this conference, like coaching-wise, talent-wise, prestige-wise, it's just – it's right. It's not quite to the SEC, but it's close. And but I feel like it's not always seen that way, if just because these games are ending at 1 o'clock in the morning.
I think there's certainly something to that. I mean, you know, Pac-12 network is certainly lags far behind the SEC network and the Big Ten network in terms of exposure. And, I may love the late night Pac-12 games along with some other people who like staying up and watching crazy football, but not everybody does that. Not everybody's watching the 10:30 kickoff on Pac-12 network on the East Coast. I realize I may be one of 10 people to do that on the East Coast. So yeah, I think it hurts. Although I think overall the reputation is kind of on the rise. I think people do recognize that it is clearly the second best conference right now and has made gains on the SEC. I mean, you know, Oregon has done a lot for exposure for the Pac-12. I think USC is still obviously on the radar. So I think there's enough respect for Stanford. And I think there is something to it, but I don't think it's necessarily going to hurt the Pac-12 this year. And you'd hope that's something that's not going to affect the selection committee. Maybe it will, but I don't think it will.
It's weird when you look at the Sark thing with USC. Because it's a strange thing, because on, I think on the Solid Verbal podcast, they were kind of talking about how USC felt like the champ of June. Yes. About like how in June everyone was so excited about USC. It felt like it was really building. Everyone's kind of waiting for them to really get it back going again. And all told, this is relatively minor. Like, it's bad. It looks bad. It's embarrassing. Yes. We all have some fun with it. But, like, it's hard to imagine USC, the players being like, well, screw it then. Never mind. Like, this team is still stacked. Do we get too excited about stuff like that just because it's a funny little blurb and a way to kind of make fun of him on message boards and so on?
Yeah, it was obviously embarrassing and not a good look for a major college football coach who's, you know, the face of the program and face of a college team. And it was a bad look. I think everybody agrees with that. But, you know, watching Sarkisian's press conference and all that, he owned up to it. I thought he seemed totally sincere and all that. So it's like the type of thing where if he does have a problem, I hope he gets help. And it sounds like he's seeking that. And otherwise, I mean, I just think everybody's kind of handled it fairly well for the situation. So I'm not, I don't like, as far as did that make me like reevaluate where I think USC is going to do this season? No, that didn't. I think there's still, you know, you have legitimate questions. Is Sarkisian a good enough coach to lead USC? I think that's a good, sure. It's, that question is still on the table. I think this is his best opportunity that he's ever had to prove that he can be a top coach and get a team to the playoff or win a conference title. You know, it's obviously better than any Washington team he had. And, you know, last year, USC was still dealing with depth issues. I mean, at one point last year, USC started three freshmen on the offensive line. It's like kind of a fact that it's like a fact that gets dismissed. It's like, oh, the sanctions are over. But that doesn't mean they're still not dealing with building depth that, you know, was a problem from that era. So I think, I don't know. I like the talent on this team. I think they're deeper. I think their offensive line is a lot better. And, you know, Cody Kessler threw for 39 touchdowns and 5 interceptions last year behind that offensive line. So I'm still cautiously optimistic, although I worry that, you know, picking them to win the conference will totally blow up, you know, because it very well could.
Did Oregon miss its best chance at a title for a while last year?
It probably did, yeah. I mean, when you have a quarterback like Mariota who is, you know, the best player in program history, then that's obviously a missed opportunity. And, you know, they just, you know, if Ohio State loses to Penn State in double overtime or, you know, something like that, and it's Oregon's probably the national champions. And so it's tough to deal with. And I think they still have a shot this year. I mean, they have one of the most intriguing players in the country in Vernon Adams, who's the transfer from Eastern Washington. He was the twice runner-up for the Walter Payton Award, which is basically the FCS Heisman. And he's making this kind of unprecedented transition, and he's an FCS quarterback transferring up for his final year to replace a Heisman winner. And he's probably going to win the job eventually. He might not win it in game one, but in his two games he's played against Pac-12 opponents, he has put up insane numbers. He's thrown for like 750 yards and 11 touchdowns in two games with an FCS supporting cast against Pac-12 opponents, against Washington and Oregon State. And you insert a guy like this who has a good arm, is really mobile, he's short, but I don't think that's going to matter too much in this offense. You move the guy around, and they have good skill talent. I think their offensive line will be all right. Oregon's still going to be fun to watch, and you know they got to go to Michigan State. They got to play USC. They got to play at Stanford. They got to play at Arizona State. They still have a shot to get to the playoff, though. If you win this conference, I think you're in the playoff.
Even if you lose two games in conference, do you think whoever wins this conference gets in the playoff?
It's tough to say that, but I think this year, that's the way I kind of see things playing out in the SEC and the Pac-12. You know, it's hard to say after last year when the top six teams all had one loss or fewer, but I think this year just kind of looks like beyond Ohio State, it looks a little bit messier.
I've heard a few people get really excited about Arizona State this year. Do you agree?
Yeah, it's tough to say because the Pac-12 South is going to be so good, but I think Arizona State and UCLA both have a lot to like. You know, Arizona State replaced almost its entire defense last year, and this is not supposed to be the type of program that that reloads and is just, you know, stays very good. They went 10-3. You know, one of their wins was a Hail Mary win over USC, and they inexplicably lost to Oregon State. But that was a good team last year, and they're fast and aggressive on defense. They get nine starters back on defense. They lose their best player on offense, Jalen Strong, but, you know, they have a lot of weapons. And Mike Bercovici, their new quarterback, played a lot last year, was as good, maybe even better than Taylor Kelly, the starter. So, you know, I think Graham's a good coach. I think their defense is well coached and fun to watch. Mike Norvell, their offensive coordinator, is probably going to get a head coaching job in the next couple of years. So there's a lot to like there. That's a team that absolutely has a chance to win the Pac-12. And an underrated game in week one is Texas A&M playing Arizona State in Houston. That could be a really fun game with two teams that are both probably a little underrated in some circles.
All right, so wrapping this up, you're big on Sark right now.
I wouldn't say that. I'm big on USC.
Oh yeah, I understand. No, it sounds like big on Sark to me. So you've got USC Oregon in the Pac-12 championship game.
I have USC over Oregon. I will say two more things. One, I think UCLA could be a factor in this race. They have everybody back except their quarterback and Josh Rosen, the true freshman. You can't expect too much from a true freshman. But he's the type of guy who could succeed a lot, you know, have a really good freshman year in this offense with everybody else back. So I think UCLA is a factor. And I've been on the record, I've tweeted this before, I think Cal is absolutely going to ruin somebody's season. Like, their defense is going to be a little bit better. They have Jared Goff at quarterback, everybody back. They're going to score 50 points every week. They get USC at home. They get they play Oregon on the road. They get Arizona State and USC at home. They play at Texas. Somebody's going to feel miserable after playing Cal. So I'm just going to say that. But I think it's USC over Oregon in the Pac-12 title game.
All right. So now we go. I think that's all the conferences, right? I think that. No. We have, of course.
I think we have the Sun Belt left.
Yeah, I think we have the Sun Belt. Yeah. Go Georgia State. I'll be at Georgia State Charlotte. Absolutely. But 3:30 starting a Friday. How do I not? So go to the SEC. So I talked about this. I do this dopey little Georgia podcast. The podcast isn't dopey. My addition to it is dopey. Georgia podcast. And one of the things I brought up on that show, which really just strikes me as amazing, and I have to think is generally unprecedented SEC history, is the team that has the most established, universally accepted best quarterback in the conference, everyone is picking last.
Yes.
That is – does that say more about the quarterbacks in the SEC, the quality of the teams, or both?
Both. I mean, the SEC West, the SEC West strength was overstated a little bit last year, but it was still the best division in college football, and it is still the best division in college football this year. You know, every team in the SEC West is in the top 27 of the preseason AP poll.
Yeah.
And I think that's totally justified. You know, it's hard for everybody to finish there because teams are going to lose. And even if Mississippi State is a top 25 team, if it goes 7-5, it's not going to be ranked in the top 25. It's just how it works. But It is weird. This is the second year in a row we're talking about the SEC, like, where are the quarterbacks? I mean, last year they had to replace Manziel and McCarron and Murray. Aaron Murray and Mettenberger and, you know, a couple other guys. And, you know, this year people kind of think, you know, Dak Prescott obviously is a great quarterback coming back. And then who's the second best quarterback? Like Jeremy Johnson, who started half a game for Auburn.
Or Matty Mock.
Matty Mock, who threw like 30 interceptions in three games in October last year. You know, it's – I don't know. I think Johnson will be good. I think Kyle Allen's going to be good at Texas A&M. I think it doesn't really matter who Alabama plays quarterback. They'll just be fine. Joshua Dobbs at Tennessee is going to be pretty good, but – yeah, it is a strange year in that the conference is so deep and the SEC West is so good, but I don't know. The quarterback play could backfire. I mean, I like LSU this year, but it's hard to like them when you saw their quarterback play last year. And Alabama is replacing a quarterback for the second year in a row. So, and same with Georgia. So it's certainly a question that kind of hangs over it. And, you know, you wonder if an SEC team gets to the playoff and the quarterback play is maybe not up to par, though, and that loses you the game. You never know.
I've seen some people put Auburn even in the playoff in a lot of ways, and I wonder if that's just because they have Alabama and Georgia at home.
That plays a part of it, sure. And I think everybody loves the Will Muschamp hire, and rightfully so. I mean, for all of the justified criticism of Muschamp as a head coach, he's a terrific defensive coordinator. He's never really put a bad defense on the field. And Auburn's defense has not been good, but they've recruited well, and their defensive front could be really good. They have some good linebackers, so it's like they're not deep, but they have enough talent to improve. So, you know, I think picking Auburn to go to the playoff is not out of the question at all. I considered it. I've been kind of back and forth on the SEC all offseason, but I don't know. I kind of have Auburn maybe top 12 instead of top 5. I think their offense will be good. It's always going to be good under Gus Malzahn. I think Johnson will have a good year, but I worry a little bit about their depth this year. I think they just, I don't know, and I don't think they sweep both of those games at home. It's still a tough schedule. They play a tricky game against Louisville in the opener, play at LSU, play at Texas A&M, who they lost to last year. So, you know, I like Auburn a lot, but I think there's just, you could say that about a lot of SEC teams who end up 9-3 this year.
Yeah, certainly. It's funny when you look at Alabama. If they had a more stable quarterback situation, I feel like people would be picking them to go undefeated again.
Yeah.
Is there a concern outside a quarterback, or is that really the only concern?
Yeah, I mean, they only have three starters back on offense. So it's like any other team, it's like, okay, you know, panic. You lose Amari Cooper. You lose your quarterback for the second year in a row. You lose an NFL running back. You lose three offensive linemen. I mean, yeah, there's a lot to replace there, for sure. But then again, you look at, Over 5 years in a row, Alabama has signed the number one recruiting class according to 24/7 Sports composite rankings, which take into account everybody's rankings. So that's insane. Like, if anybody can reload, it's Alabama. They have like 3 5-star recruits ready to take over at wide receiver. I mean, Robert Foster or Ardarius Stewart or Calvin Ridley, a true freshman. One of them is going to be a breakout player. Two of them probably will be. They're not going to be Amari Cooper, but they're going to be fine. Derrick Henry at running back is a scary player who is 240 pounds and runs fast and runs people over. And he's never even been the full-time starter. He's going to be that this year. So Alabama, you know, at quarterback, it's like you just need somebody who Saban trusts and who is not going to screw it up. It's not like, you know, A.J. McCarron was a good quarterback, but it's not like he was out there totally winning games by himself. Greg McElroy was not doing that either. I mean, they're solid quarterbacks, they have a command of the offense and they don't screw it up. And that's what Alabama needs to find. And they have like 5 options. So hopefully one of them steps up. And then, you know, they have the best defensive front in college football. I mean, they have like 3 defensive lines of 4- and 5-star recruits and they're all good and nobody's going to run the ball on them. I mean, they have some issues in the secondary, but it's like every Alabama loss gets magnified as if it's the end of the world when it just, okay, they lost a game. Right. They have some holes, but they're still really good. Right. And they're still probably going to win the conference.
I feel like we could talk about the West for 25 minutes on their own, but we should look at the East. Georgia considered the favorite, but again, considered the favorite most of the time. I thought SB Nation did a good job looking at this and saying that, like, you know, Bill Connelly wrote about how, you know, everyone always says, oh, wow, Missouri's totally, totally underrated. They're always underrated. They're always underrated. And we're picking them third. We're picking them fourth, which I think is a pretty fair point. But I think you and I think a lot of people still have them third. Is is Missouri's success the last couple of years more because Missouri's been so great, or because maybe some of the teams like Georgia, Tennessee's been down, South Carolina's been down, Florida's been down, and Georgia always has that one or two games? Is it have they just taken advantage of circumstance?
I hate saying you know, hedging and saying both, but it's probably a little bit of both. Missouri's defense has been great. Their defense, they've just been a factory of defensive linemen. You know, they had some good skill talent. They had some good receivers last year. And, you know, but they've certainly taken advantage of circumstances. I mean, yeah, Georgia has a, you know, deserved reputation at this point for choking away a game it should not. And Tennessee's been down and Florida's been down. So they've taken advantage of circumstances. I think that's going to stop this year. I think Missouri will be pretty good. They have a favorable schedule. They, you know, they play Mississippi State and somebody else beatable from the West. But Mississippi State and Arkansas, which are tough games, but not, you know, Auburn and Alabama. But I think Georgia's the team this year. I don't love the Brian Schottenheimer hire at all. I know it's offensive coordinator, but I just don't think it's going to be that complicated this year. You have one of the two or three best offensive lines in the country, and you have the best running back in the country, Nick Chubb, who I picked to win the Heisman. And their defense is getting better under Jeremy Pruitt. They have great linebackers. Secondary is better. You know, you got to play Alabama and Auburn from the West, which is as bad as it gets. But I like this team this year. And, you know, we'll get to the championship pick, and then I'm going to say something that Georgia fans won't like. But I like Georgia this year to be a legitimate contender for the playoff.
Well, yeah, and that's interesting. I kind of want to get into that because, yeah, I feel like we could go over so much with the SEC down so many rounds. It is worth noting, and this is my question, and you have in the championship game, SEC championship game, Alabama over Georgia, which I think makes sense, but it looks like you have Georgia beating Alabama when they play on October 3rd, correct?
I do.
So for the sake of discussion, this would be Alabama 10-2 and 6-2 in the SEC, beating a Georgia team that would be Georgia's second loss in that playoff game, because you have them, I think, I'm assuming at Tennessee or maybe at Auburn, whatever your second loss.
Yeah, here's the scenario I laid out, is that Alabama loses at Georgia and they lose to LSU at home, which is, I think LSU's going to be pretty good. Yeah. And that's always kind of a toss-up game because it's just a fun, hard-hitting game that's always close. It'll probably be like 10-9 or something. So I have Alabama losing twice. I think they have enough holes where that can happen. And for the first time in a while, Alabama does not luck out with its schedule. You know, they play Tennessee every year, and Tennessee has been down for 10 years. And then past couple of years, they've had, you know, Kentucky or Vanderbilt rotate on the schedule. This year, they played Georgia and Tennessee, who I agree with a lot of people who say Tennessee's the second-best team in the East. So it's a tougher road. They play Wisconsin, too. The whole West is good. So I have Alabama losing twice. I have Georgia losing to Auburn, but beating everybody else. And then, yeah, I have it being a very painful moment in Atlanta. And I should say, this is the same scenario I have in the Pac-12, actually, where I have USC losing to Oregon in the regular season and then beating them in the championship game. So that's, I'm sorry, Georgia fans, the 2012 SEC championship was so much fun and so agonizing for Georgia. And I think we could see the same thing happen again.
Except this time they beat Alabama in the regular season.
So it probably make it even worse, although it's hard to be as agonizing of a loss as they had in 2012.
You know, that comes up around here every once in a while.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I like Georgia a lot. I think they're going to go to the Sugar Bowl. And I'll have bowl projections up next week, but I think they come up just short.
All right, so now we're going to do the rest, because we now have the rest of football after this five. Give me three teams, and Notre Dame counts, in 3 minutes, give me three teams that either could crash or would have the best chance of crashing, or at least in a theoretical world, could go undefeated outside of the Power Five.
Notre Dame, I think, the scenario I have is that USC, Clemson, Alabama and Notre Dame all have, and TCU all have two losses. So there will be a playoff debate if my scenario happens, and it will be chaotic. But I have Notre Dame getting left out, which sounds weird in all of history to say Notre Dame would not get in, you know, a championship
right.
having the same resume as everybody else. Because that's never happened, like, ever.
Right.
But I think Notre Dame's going to be really good. I've bought in all offseason. I thought I was going out on a limb in, like, June when I wrote a column about how, hey, they're underappreciated. They have expectations that are lower than they should be for the first time ever, because they're usually, you know, overinflated. Right. And now, you know, SI picked them in the playoff, put them on the cover. It's like, okay,
never mind.
I guess everybody caught up to that. They're probably going to go 8-4 now, but they're going to be deep on. They're going to be a lot better on defense. They just blew up on defense last year because they had injuries and suspensions, and They get Kyvari Russell back from suspension. He's a really good corner. Their secondary is going to be a lot better. Their defensive line just lost Jaron Jones, the defensive tackle for the season, to an injury, so that's obviously bad. But I think they have enough on defense to improve. They have a really good offensive line. They have really good receivers. Malik Zaire, who takes over for Everett Golson at quarterback, is number one, probably not going to turn over the ball as much because that's basically impossible. And two, kind of his ability to run allows Notre Dame to do more of what it wants to do under Brian Kelly, which is kind of a tempo spread run offense. And he can run some option. Golson could run, but wasn't as much of a runner. Zaire has more of a running mentality, and I think it's going to work for that offense. So I have Notre Dame at 10-2. They play a pretty tricky schedule. I think they're going to be in the playoff mix. So they're in that conversation, though. And then two teams that I would have, and I don't think any group of five team can get in the playoff, but I think the two best teams that are going to compete for that major bowl spot are Boise State, which, you know, it's like Alabama. It's like, right, when in doubt, just pick Boise State to be the best team from those conferences. And they have almost every starter back except for their quarterback and their running back, which is significant. But, you know, their quarterback, Grant Hedrick, was a solid player, but he's not, like, irreplaceable. The running back, Jay Ajayi, touched the ball, like, 400 times last year. So he's really tough to replace. But they have a good coach in Brian Harsin. Offensive line's really good. Good receivers. Their defense has two, maybe even three legitimate All-America candidates. So I think Boise State, you know, won't go worse than 10-2. And losing two games still got them the Fiesta Bowl last year. So I have them at 11-1. I think they'll get that spot and get to the Fiesta Bowl again. The other team I'd have that I think it's kind of wide open among the rest of the group of five, but I like Cincinnati this year. I think their offense is going to put up a ton of points. They did last year, and they even had some injury issues. Gunnar Kiel, who you may remember from his recruiting saga where he committed to Indiana, then committed to LSU, then went to Notre Dame, then transferred to Cincinnati as a five-star recruit. He threw for 3,200 yards last year. They have a ton of receivers. The running game is pretty solid. The American Athletic is pretty deep. They have some, you know, it's going to be a tight race with Memphis and UCF and Temple even and Houston and Navy. But Cincinnati can score enough points and maybe even upset Miami October 1st, which might not even be an upset, that they could compete with Boise State, especially if Boise State falters a little bit.
All right. Sorry, the rest of college football. We had to have those 90 seconds on Illinois, so we don't have more time.
I'm sorry to Idaho and New Mexico State and these great teams we didn't talk about.
Yeah, because we got Illinois. America gets it. All right, wrap us up with your playoff and your championship pick.
Well, I laid it out a little bit where I have a lot of two-loss teams, which I will probably be wrong about, but you never know. I have in the Orange Bowl, which is one of the two semifinals, in the Orange Bowl on New Year's Eve, I have number one Ohio State and number four USC, which jumps over Oregon in the Pac-12 title game to get that spot. And in the Cotton Bowl, which is the other semifinal on New Year's Eve this year, I have number two Baylor and number three Alabama. And I'm thought about saying, Alabama will beat Baylor by that time of the year, but I'm just going to stick with the top two teams. And in the championship game in Arizona, I have Ohio State beating Baylor. But I'm probably wrong, but then again, last year's playoff ended up, it's a funny thing because last year everybody thought it was a chaotic season, and when Mississippi State and Ole Miss were like in the top three, and then it turned out that the four playoff teams were like who like 75% of the country picked in the preseason anyway. So you never know. It's a chaotic sport, but we know who recruits the best, and we have a good idea of who the contenders are going to be. So maybe I'll be right, but I think it's going to be a messy season.
All right. Well, I'm excited. We're less than a week away. I'm pretty amped, and by less than a week away, I mean less than a week away until Charlotte and Georgia State.
I will watch that game, and last year's Abilene Christian Georgia State game was fun in a funny way because it was kind of ugly, but it was fun.
I hope Georgia State wins because that will mean they will have two wins in two seasons in which games that I was personally there for.
Well, so, let's see. I have Georgia State at I have that as their only win this year.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be great. It's going to be great. So, all right. So, but I'm very excited. Thank you. I read your stuff religiously. We're lucky to have you. So, thanks for coming on and keep up the great work, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All right. Thanks to Matt Brown. You can follow him on Twitter at Matt Brown CFB, MattBrownCFB. We're going to have him hang around for a little bit of trivia, so that'll go up tomorrow or whenever. But other than that, this is Willie's Experience Podcast. The music is by the Sundogs. Please rate and review us on iTunes. We'll be back on, I believe, Monday night or Tuesday morning with a new podcast with Allison Futter. Be safe out there. It's college football week next week. This will be very exciting.